You're listening to Turkish Football Weekly, available on the World Football Daily Club podcast feed. If you're a member of World Football Daily, you can go to the site and stream the show anytime to your computer, mobile phone, or tablet without having to download or sync anything. If you're not a member of World Football Daily, just search World Football Daily Club podcast in the iTunes store and download the World Football Daily Club podcast feed for free. Enjoy the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Turkish Football Weekly for the week of October 17th, 2013. My name is Atta Dizdar, and Jeremy Chapman won't be joining us this week. He's got some work-related issues that he has to take care of. Actually, he has told me that he might be swinging down by my area, so hopefully we'll meet up then. But this week, I am joined by a guy who was previously on the podcast some months ago, Khan Bayezid, all the way from Belgium. What's going on, man?
Hey, Atta, thank you for having me. Yeah, nothing much. Belgium qualified for the World Cup. Yippee.
Well, we do have Turkey's World Cup qualifying to be concerned about. Let's just start off right now with the Turkish result against Estonia. 2-0 win to Turkey. Burak Yılmaz and Umut Bulut scoring for Turkey. Bulut scored in the 22nd minute, and Burak Yılmaz scored in the 47th minute. And Burak Yılmaz, up to that point, scored at least a goal in five straight national team matches, which is a record. Unfortunately, Cene Erkin picked up a yellow card in this game. He was on the yellow card borderline, so he had missed the match against the Netherlands, which we will talk about later. But for this, I thought, Estonia isn't a bad team. You know, we saw what they did against the Netherlands at home, but in Tallinn, Turkey gets a 2-0 result. So the belief was that the supposed miracle could happen as Fatih Terim went 3-for-3 ever since replacing Abdullah Avcı. And we saw that, Turkey, it wasn't against a bad team. You know, we thought maybe Estonia would be a little bit one of the weaker clubs, but Turkey did a pretty good performance here, I thought.
Yeah, I think it's not to be underestimated. Estonia is a pretty good team. I think they lack some individual quality to really threaten. But they are the only team in the group that managed to stop the Netherlands. I mean, Turkey had a good go at it in Amsterdam, but the Netherlands, still outplayed us, I guess, with efficiency there. And Estonia is the only team that has been able to jeopardize Holland's perfect record, and I mean, if you see what Holland did to Hungary on the same match day,
I know a few Hungarian guys on Twitter, and you know, they were very disappointed with that. It seems as though they would have to, you know, have a good drink or something. You know, just want to say hi to DJ Gabby G over Twitter. You know, he was on the show previewing the Turkey Hungary game when they played a few months ago, but. Yeah, but the Netherlands, I mean, they were a pretty powerful squad, but, you know, back to this game, I guess, really, Turkey, was it really just a kind of a cover for what we could really see against the Netherlands, or did you think that, you know, this was pretty much a ho-hum for them, you know, just somebody they should have beaten, they did get it done?
Well, the thing with Estonia, I mean, that was a team that they had to beat. The Netherlands, you know, it had to be a small miracle in order for us to beat them. And I think we saw very early on in the match that it wasn't going to be, you know, our night. And the Netherlands, I saw a lot of, I read a lot of praise on the Dutch sides, like the praising the Dutch performance. I think we made it very easy for them. After 8 minutes, Volkan and the entire defense just, I don't know what they were doing. And, an indirect free kick just goes in straight away. So it actually turned into a direct free kick. And it wasn't Volkan's corner. I have to say, I wasn't happy about that. I was like, oh, seriously? And then, I mean, just apart from that, I think we just lacked a lot of quality on the midfield, and the passing was terrible. If you saw some of the, you know, there's the simple first touches and the ball control, like Mehmet Topal had some horrible ball controls in the midfield. Like it looked like he needed 30 seconds to control a ball, and then he let, like, when he was totally free, let the guy get to him because he was just too slow on the ball. And lots of wrong passes from the midfielders. Arda wasn't in his game, and I think that was mainly because everyone was looking to him to do anything, because Selçuk was nowhere. Didn't really expect him to do much, but yeah.
So
the problem that we were playing 4-4-2 was a big mistake, I think, and that's to be, I think Terim is responsible for that. But let's be honest, we didn't lose it in this match. We lost it losing twice to Hungary, and we lost it a year ago, not against the Netherlands. Yeah. So that kind of does
transition to our Netherlands discussion. Turkey losing 2-0 with goals from Arjen Robben in the 8th minute and Wesley Sneijder in the 46th minute. Now, I got to say something about that Arjen Robben goal. It just seemed as though, like, everybody was asleep for Turkey, you know. I think Volkan Demirel got really confused. You know, I think he was maybe expecting a clearance or some sort of a hit on the ball from a foot from somebody. And then he just had this look of, like, WTF. It just went in. So maybe you couldn't fault him too much for that. And I know Jeremy had a complaint that why wasn't Onur Kıvrak starting in this game? Wasn't starting in this game because of his, you know, shutout streak. I mean, he had like 360 plus minutes of league shutout streak in the Turkish league. So I think maybe Volkan was picked because, you know, he's kind of got the experience in the big game situation. But, you know, Onur Kıvrak maybe could have started this game. I don't know if his positioning isn't all that great, but, you know, a lot of people were blaming him for that. But I think, like you said, Turkey really didn't lose it in this game, because, I mean, come on, it's the Netherlands. I mean, they're probably one of the best teams in the world. I mean, even you would figure that out. You're in the Benelux region.
Without a doubt. I mean, they are one of the best teams in the world. There's no doubt there. But it doesn't and we didn't lose it in this match. But it doesn't excuse a team that this is a crucial game. This was the biggest game since 2008. The players should have been concentrated. I mean, I can imagine you're going to lose your concentration in a match at some points, but not in the 8 minutes. That's ridiculous. I mean, if you Volkan might have been expecting a clearance, but if you see the way the ball came in, it was pretty difficult for anyone to clear it, and it was in his corner. He should never have let it go in. He was just out of position, caught off guard. I think, in my opinion, that was his mistake. Should Onur have played over him? Yeah, I think definitely. Volkan has the experience over Onur, arguably. But Volkan hasn't been, in my opinion, hasn't been the great goalkeeper that, you know, got Rüştü Reçber out of the goal all those years ago. Ever since the last 2-3 seasons, I don't think Volkan's been getting his level of, you know, his best form. And let's be honest, he's been prone to these types of mistakes and much worse than this his entire career. I don't know if you remember against Schalke in the Champions League. He's a great goalkeeper at times, but he has his lapses, like most Turkish goalkeepers, don't get me wrong. I mean, I haven't seen a flawless Turkish goalkeeper
in a while. Yeah, I think you're saying, like, Demirel's mostly a Jekyll and Hyde character at this point.
Yeah, most Turkish goalkeepers are. I mean, Rüştü as well. I mean, he had his amazing games, like, if you remember, against Brazil and everything like that. But then, like, also, like, in Croatia is a perfect example in the 2008 World European Championship. You know, what was he doing with the Croatian goal? But then in the penalty shootout, he stops, like, 2 or 3 penalties. So, you know, it's the same with Volkan. And most Turkish goalkeepers. I think Onur is probably one of the few that is relatively flawless, I'd say. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, he's injury prone, sadly. Yeah.
I think Kıvrak wasn't the same after he had that ACL and MCL tear. I think it was in 2011 or so. He really hasn't been the same goalkeeper since then. Because, you know, it takes a while to, you know, trust that knee once you get that sort of injury.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's for a lot of athletes. It's an issue. Once you get a very serious injury like that, to be able to go into the battle fully 100% again, you see that a lot with players. Like,
But one thing that does jump out in my mind was, defensive issues. You started Hassan Ali Calderon as left back. Well, that's his natural position. They got no other choice. He's basically the number one choice by default in that situation because Jonner Erkin got the yellow card suspension. And then, same thing with Gökhan Gönül. There really isn't anybody else that really can fill in that position. I mean, maybe Serdar Kurtuluş of Beşiktaş could have filled in.
No, I think Gökhan is without it. I've always been very high on Gökhan. Like, I'm a Beşiktaş supporter. I like Serdar, but Serdar is, compared to Gökhan, he's much more limited. Gökhan's our best by far. I didn't think he had a great game, which I don't think he. I mean, I think Gökhan's one of those players that I don't see him having a bad game very often. And I think this was one of his less good games, but he wasn't terrible by any stretch. I mean, there were much worse players on the field. Hasan Ali Calderon, for only having played 97 minutes so far this season, I thought he was one of the best guys on the field for Turkey. And it's a shame that he doesn't get more playing time at Fenerbahce, really. I think he was good. I mean, and he was also responsible for one of the biggest and one of the few chances Turkey had with that excellent cross, and Umut headed it wide.
And my problems in central defense, I still don't get why Semih Kaya is starting this game. I mean, you could probably think of maybe Egemen Korkmaz, not to have a Fener bias, but I think like Egemen Korkmaz could have been used in this game, although he wasn't called up. And what I noticed with Semih Kaya is when it comes to Galatasaray, he needs like somebody to back him up to like hide his weaknesses, because we saw like his first season with Galatasaray as being a starter, he kind of had Ousfolushi there to cover for him. And the thing is, like, I think he's fine for Galatasaray, but when it comes to the national team, I felt like he had a few good performances in the fall of 2011, and then he gets fast tracked to the national team. And there are other defenders like Serdar Aziz, for example, for Bursaspor, who never gets a shot at it, and maybe Ahmet Görkem Gök of oh God, I can't remember what is it, Elazığspor?
Or Giray from
Yeah,
Trabzon.
Giray
I've
Kaçar,
always thought he was a decent defender.
or
I mean,
even Aykut
it's
Demir
not a
from Trabzonspor.
I could. He's an excellent defender, I think. And I mean, excellent is a big word in Turkish. Term. I mean, which defender really is excellent in Turkey? But yeah, I agree. Semih is a liability. He's a liability for Galatasaray as well. He had an impressive first season. Nobody really knew what to expect of him. I mean, and then he came in and he did well, and he had Ouifalushi, one of the most experienced defenders, that Galatasaray have had since Rigobert Song, and he held his hand, and the flaws in his game weren't as apparent. But once Ouifalushi got injured and he started getting paired up with Gökhan Zan, which isn't great present for Semih, of course, because he is a young guy and it's good for him to have somebody to mentor him. But I mean, Semih has got potential, but you can't expect Ömer Toprak, who's only 25 himself, to babysit Semih. And I think Ömer is probably our best choice in central defense right now. But we need two. I mean, we're not gonna play 3-5-2 at any time, I think. So we're gonna need two central defenders, and at the moment, that's probably one of the biggest issues for the Turkish national team. There's a few upcoming guys in Germany.
Khan
What's
Ayhan
his
is
name?
one. I believe Khan
Yeah,
Ayhan of
from
Schalke is
Schalke.
one. I mean, he's only 18. I mean, I believe he said earlier this week that he feels more in line with Turkey more than Germany at this point. I think he's like what, 6 feet tall? I mean, a good like what, 180 meters or something like that, or 1.8 meters, something like that.
Indeed. Yeah, and I mean, we've got guys coming up, and I mean, there's going to need to be a breakout player in the coming years with the eyeing the 2016 European Championship and 2018 World Cup. But we definitely need a good central defender to pair up with Ömer Toprak. I think Ömer is a fine defender. I think he's reliable, and he plays for Bayer Leverkusen, so he plays at a decent level in Germany. one of the better clubs there. So I think he's going to be a good, solid performer for the coming two tournaments, maybe three. You know, he's still 20. He's still young. He's only 25, and we've got quite a bit of talent spread across the team. But I think what we really lack is a consistent striker. Like, I know you're not a big Burak Yılmaz fan, and there's been a lot of hate on him for this. What, you know, his terrible performance in the Netherlands game. I'm not a hater of him. Like, I'd see him for what he is. I think he's an excellent striker when he's on form. Sadly, you know, for the Turkish national team, he's not been on form that much lately. Yeah, he scored against Estonia, but yeah, he couldn't miss that chance almost, you know.
Yeah, I just looked up Ahmet Gürkan Gürk of Elazığspor, and he does play for Elazığspor. You know, he's like 6'4", which is like 1.93 meters, but he's like 30, so that's pretty much out of the question, unless you have unless you need a really tall guy to defend on corners and things like that.
But I get why guys like that aren't getting called up. I mean, like you say, he's 30 years old. In a Turkish league, quite physical, and we've always seen that a strong, tall defender does well in Turkey. Take Sever Çetin, for example. You know, but those types of defenders do well. Yalçın from Kasımpaşa.
Yeah, Yalçın Ayhan, right.
Yeah, but those types do well. But if we're going to call them up for the national team, I don't think they'll do that well. Like Egemen, you know, I still don't understand why when he was at Trabzon, I think he was probably the best Turkish central defender at the time, and he just wasn't getting called up. And then he went to Beşiktaş. I think he still played very well. And then he went to Fener. I think he's not been that great for Fener, but he's still a very good alternative. Definitely over Semi, but I guess, you know, in Terim's mind, maybe he's thinking, well, you know, when 2016 and 2018 come along, Egemen will be, what, 33, 34, right. And Semi will only be like 23, 24, so yeah. I can understand it. I think it was a big mistake in this match, as proven on the second goal. I think that was Semi's mistake, pretty much. He wasn't the only one, of course. I mean, but yeah.
Okay, so
we see it there.
Let's transition to like maybe a talk about where does Turkey really go from here. We kind of hinted at it with our little discussions on the players themselves, but you know, considering that Euro 2016 is going to be increased to like 24 nations, I mean, I think Enis Köylü tweeted this, you know, Turkey could be good enough to be one of the other 23 teams. And I don't know whether like 24 teams is going to be too much, but you know, expecting to 24 teams for Euro, I mean, that's just kind of ridiculous for me. I mean, but I know like Europe's got a whole lot of countries and things like that, but I'm thinking, I don't know how the qualification is going to get set up. Maybe it's going to be like the four best third place teams in a group, but you know, maybe Turkey could get in. I think, you know, I think in the November FIFA dates, maybe Terim should just experiment with a lot of, you know, fringe players, you know, give the other players a chance, like from Anatolian teams, you know, these guys on the big three, you know, just set them aside. You probably know that, you know, they have the potential, they have their place, but you need some guys for, you know, backup reasons.
Well, I think first things first, you know, need to make sure that the guys he calls up actually play for their teams. You know, there's a lot of young talent, but if they're not actually playing, you know, like a guy like Sedat Gürler, he's playing every week and he's doing well at Elazığ. He's worth a call up. He's still young. He's still like 21 or something. You know, give that kid a shot. You know, I mean, what I'm basically pointing out is like we've have got like, for example, Kerim Freyus at Beşiktaş, and he's not really playing a lot right now. So instead of calling him up, maybe a guy like Sedat Gürler should get called up, given a chance, and like you said, you know, try those types of players. And for the love of God, please, let's finally transition and build a team around Nuri Sahin or someone else.
What about Özhan Özyakup?
Özhan is a good alternative. We have Hakan Calhanoğlu, who's doing tremendously at Hamburg. You know, there's still Mehmet Ekici as well. You know, we need a set piece specialist. I think we've seen that as well in the Netherlands game. I mean, all the corners, all the free kicks, they were horrible. please let's get a set piece specialist in there. You know, Özyakup's got good set pieces. Ekici's got amazing set pieces. I mean, we've got those guys. Why aren't we using them? Nuri Sahin, this is the second qualifying campaign that he has been second or third choice after Selçuk and Mehmet and Emre.
Well, let me just interrupt you there. He was injured. He was injured for this qualifying round.
He was injured for this game, but all the previous games, he's always second choice. And
see, you know, I don't get that because I've always thought like Selçuk İnan is nothing more than a poor man's Nuri Sahin. I mean, he's older. He basically has the tools, but just probably like maybe five times worse than Nuri Sahin. He's capable, but you know, at that level, when you're looking at a guy who plays for Galatasaray, you know, nothing against the guy, but then you have a guy who plays for Borussia Dortmund, who obviously has a much better quality opponents that he sees every week. I would put Nuri Sahin ahead of Selçuk İnan, and he's younger. I mean, he made his debut with Turkey when he was 16 back in 05. So I'm thinking, you know, why is it Nuri Sahin, you know, starting over Selçuk İnan? You know, I mean, are you that afraid that the Galatasaray fans are going to be, you know, PO'd about it? I don't think so. You know, it's just you have to put the best 11 out there, and I don't think that was the best 11. But to be fair, though, Nuri Sahin was out for this qualifying cycle, this qualifying weekend, I should say. So it's not really much of the fault there, but I think, I don't know who said this. I think it was either Louis van Gaal or Arjen Robben, and said that, you know, I feel for Turkey, but, you know, they really lost it at the beginning. You know, they lost it, I don't know the exact quote, but I think it was Robben who said, you know, Turkey really lost it, you know, early on, not now.
Yeah. They lost it in the games against Hungary.
Right.
Those two games cost the second spot in the group, not the qualification, because if you look at the teams that got, you know, ended second in the other groups, Portugal, France, you know, teams like that, if we play them in the playoffs, you know, we played the playoffs last time around, got Croatia, and we got knocked out, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
So there's tough teams there. And the European qualification round is the hardest one. Let's not kid ourselves. If we look at the teams that, you know, have to play each other for a spot at the World Cup. And also to get back to you on the point of, does Europe have enough good countries to do a competitive European championship? I think pretty sure they do. I mean, apart from like Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, you know, Uruguay and those types of countries, with all due respect, I mean, the U.S. wouldn't qualify if they were in the European qualification stages, I think.
Right.
And I don't think Australia would either. I don't think, well, Japan would either. But that's another discussion, of course. But yeah,
I think we could pretty much obviously think that Fatih Terim is going to be signed to a long-term contract from here on out. I don't think the TFF has decided on it, but they pretty much know that they're probably going to try and sign him to a long-term deal, even though his contract ends in, I think it's in June or something like that. But, yeah, I think pretty much, I mean, considering Terim's record now, I mean, I would say, you know, go sign him to a long-term deal and see where it goes from here.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think as long as Terim is going to stop, you know, putting in guys like ahead of other types of players, like Nuri Sahin, I think it's time. He's only 25 years old. He just turned 25 last month. This is a guy you can build a team around. But this is, don't get me wrong, this is the type of player that you need to build around if you want to get the maximum out of him. The thing is, in the past, some people may argue, okay, well, Nuri's had his chances. He's started in a couple of games and he really wasn't all that great. Well, to those people I say, yeah, but a player like him, who is really the controller of the entire team, who pulls all the strings from midfield, he needs confidence and he needs experience with his other players. Like last season at Borussia Dortmund, he didn't play much because he had been out of it for a while. This season he's doing great again.
Yep.
And I think if he's given the confidence and you put him into a young midfield, like let's say Nuri, Alper, and Ozan Özyakup, you know, or you put Nuri with Alper and Hakan Calhanoglu or something like that. You know, there's plenty of young guys that we can build around. I think I've never been a big fan of Mehmet Topal. I always thought he was an extremely overrated player that's quite limited. And I never really understood the hype. And I think against the Netherlands, again, he showed that he's not that special. Selçuk, I think he's a fine player, especially when he was on form 2 years ago for Galatasaray. He was amazing. But at no point should he be the first pick over Nuri Sahin, unless if Nuri isn't playing, which he wasn't then at Real Madrid. So, right. Okay, Selçuk was playing then. I can get that to a degree. But if you look at the Belgian national team, for example, Kevin De Bruyne, he's been the man of their campaign, scored 4 goals. He was extremely important. He's not playing at Chelsea either. But, you know, sometimes there can be exceptions made. Some players are just that special if they're not playing for their club for whatever reason. But they're, you know, a guy like Nuri Sahin is a type of player that's something extra. I think he's a level above most players we have. So we should be building around guys like that. And if you're going to play 4-4-2, let's at least have two decent strikers then. We don't. We had Umut and Burak. And Umut's been okay in this qualification campaign. But I think if we, with the quality of strikers we have, we shouldn't be playing 4-4-2 with the quality of midfielders we have. We should be playing 4-3-3 all the time. You know, Arda on the left, Gökhan on the right. And, you know, Nuri Sahin, Alper, Hakan Calhanoğlu, Özyakup. You know, there's plenty of guys we can choose from in the midfield that, you know, are capable and young.
Right. I'm glad you kind of brought up Umut Bulut, and, you know, maybe we'd have to wrap this up soon, but I think maybe I could get into a little bit of a discussion on Umut Bulut. You know, to me, I've seen this season, you know, he's kind of like that forward you call off the bench in order to, like, change the game. He's not like a starting type. And that seems like he's – you saw what he did in the Juventus game that Galatasaray had in the Champions League. You know, he kind of changed the game on its head by scoring that goal. So he's mm-hmm. kind of like that 12th man.
Yeah, and
he did the same kind of like the 12th man you call off the bench.
Yeah, definitely. He has shown it last year against Schalke as well in the Champions League for Galatasaray. And he did it again against Juventus. And – well, let's be honest. I mean, he scored, 3 goals against Andorra, and he scored against Estonia, and, you know, he's been good. But we should we be playing 4-4-2? The problem we had against the Netherlands was that we got in a 2-against-3 situation in the midfield, and Mehmet Topal and Selçuk couldn't handle that. Maybe it would have been different if we would have had a third midfielder in the center there, like Alper or something.
Yeah.
Because Nuri and Ozan were both injured. But
right.
We have Alper
Potuk
starting
a pretty capable midfielder there. Yeah, I mean, you know, why the Turkish team wasn't playing like maybe a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, like you said. I mean, I think the problem is the 4-4-2 is just, you know, kind of outdated. I mean, that's kind of like where you start from.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, with Turkey's midfield, I mean, you know, where we're seeing, you know, where does Turkey go from here? I mean, you got a bunch of guys, you know, midfielders. I mean, Turkey churn out midfielders all the time. But, you know, we see that a lot of the development has been outsourced. And, you know, I think I had this discussion some years ago with a friend of mine. Maybe Turkey should try and open up maybe like a Clairefontaine or they have another thing in England, like something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it'd probably be located in Istanbul, and that would probably be a detriment. You know, maybe open it up in like Izmir or something. Because, you know, first of all, we don't see a lot of really decent players. I mean, if a player is playing decently, like a young player is playing decently, and you kind of fear what will happen with Ersan Özyakup or even Salih Uçar if they start to become pretty good or things like that. You know, they get overhyped by the Turkish media, who are just praying for some Turkish star to, you know, just come out of the woodwork like a Maradona, for instance, or they want the next Messi or, you know, even Mohamed Demirci, if we want to keep the Beşiktaş theme going, you know, Mohamed Demirci is, I kind of fear like what would happen in case this guy gets really, really big, you know, I mean, would the Turkish media take him down or things like that?
Well, I think the difference is with guys like Mohamed and then Ozan, on the other hand, I think the difference is Ozan was schooled in the Netherlands and in England. I think he is much better capable of resisting and keeping his feet on the ground, while guys who were born and raised in Turkey are usually a little bit more prone to, you know, the, how should I put it, the mental lapses and thinking they're God on earth. I think I think Ozan will be fine. I think the biggest threat to his career could be injuries, which I hope he's going to stay safe from, because he's an incredibly important player. I think his importance for Beşiktaş is extremely underrated. Most people are always, you know, blowing smoke up Manuel Fernandes's ass. But I think, and I think we saw it once Ozan got injured, that he's the most important guy in the midfield for Beşiktaş, and he might not be as flairy as some
He doesn't
other
have
players,
the flair, you mean? He doesn't have the flair that Fernandes has, you mean?
Yeah, I guess you could probably... you know, he's not a foreigner. He's a Turk, and we all know how much Turks love foreign players. I think that's, you know, been the downfall for a lot of talented Turkish players in the past, like Mehmet Topuz. And, you know, they're good players, but they're not foreign, they're not expensive enough, and they're not high profile enough. So, you know, they end up on the bench and other guys play instead of them. Well, in Mehmet Topuz's case, it's different because Fenerbahce had Alex at the time in his position. So I don't think that was an overrated foreigner by any means. I think Alex is one of the best, if not the best foreigner ever in the Turkish league. Yes, Galatasaray fans, I think he's better than Hagi.
You're a brave man.
I'm going to get some hate now.
I'm thankful you actually mentioned foreigners, because it actually goes into my last point here. You know, Jeremy mentioned on Twitter that the foreigner caps should be kept. Now, I thought about something earlier in the week that maybe, you know, the loophole with that foreigner cap is if you get like a Turk from the diaspora, you know, like me or you, for instance, and even though you're half Belgian, half Turkish.
Azerbaijan or...
Yeah. You know, but, I mean, like would that foreigner cap, should that foreigner cap be extended to diaspora, maybe? I mean, yeah, you can have... I don't think that's probably going to work, but I would think that, you know, we've seen that the outsourcing of Turkish youth development has happened at least for the last two decades. I mean, it started pretty much in the 80s when, you know, when Yup Derwal came into Galatasaray back in, I think, 84. You know, he was starting to bring in all the, you know, the German-born Turks, you know. I mean, let's put it this way. They've had better coaching. And, you know, one of the things about Turkey is there's not a lot of UEFA-licensed coaches. You know, that's been a huge problem over the years. But
I think the problem is more at the youth levels. Like, when we're talking about UEFA licensed coaches, those are usually, you know, those are coaches that are at the A team level. I think it's too late when once a young player gets to that level, it's too late. The difference with the guys born and raised in Germany, Holland, Belgium, and coming to Turkey is that they have the basics. They've been playing football in a relatively professional environment since they were 6, 7, 8 years old. And in Turkey, you know, we have 80 million people living in the country. But the difference is, like, I grew up in Belgium. Every little town has a football club that has youth coaches and that has proper guidance to those young players. And, you know, they get picked up. Talented players get picked up at a very young age and they go to the bigger clubs. But in Turkey, you know, like, for example, Ibrahim Üzülmez, I don't know if you know his career. Basically, when he was like 10, 11, he got spotted playing on, like most Turkish players, got spotted playing on the streets with some friends. And somebody said, hey, this kid's pretty good. We should call in some local, you know, to call into the local club and let them know. But that's, you know, when they're 10, 11, the fundamentals that they get taught at 6, 7, 8 years old, it's already too late for that. And kids... It's like with anything, like a dog. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. You know, when you're raising a dog, you need to do it from the beginning, and you need to do it good. You need to do it well. Same way with people. I mean, if you're getting to them when they're 6, 7, and you're teaching them the fundamentals, then it's going to be engraved in their memory. If you're going to do that when they're 12 or 11 or 13, it's too late
for that. Yeah, but you know, one of the things I was thinking about, you know, you have those diaspora Turks who are better trained. You know, let's not forget, you know, they're better trained, better coached. You know, they're discovered at much younger ages. I mean, maybe I would think, like, after a certain date, like any, like, Turk who's a diaspora Turk who gets signed would be counted as a foreigner. Not really because it's a douchebag thing to do, but really more to stimulate the clubs trying to develop youth from within. Like anybody before a certain date who is signed who's part of the Turkish diaspora would get grandfathered in and they'd be considered a local player. And also, we've had this debate over, players with an EU passport becoming local players and, Turkey's not in the European Union. I don't see why that should be an issue. I mean, if they get into the European Union, then okay, you could have, players with EU passports counted as local players. But unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on which side of the fence you fall on in this situation, Turkey's not in the European Union. And to have EU passport players be counted as domestic players, I mean, if that happens, I mean, the league's just going to take a nosedive in terms of quality. I mean, clubs are going to be spending more on getting players, winning league championships, and they won't be spending money on the fundamentals, the youth coaches, the, training youth from, like you said, 6, 7, 8 years old, because, that's when they really get discovered.
I don't know if that's necessarily true because there's so many examples of clubs, big clubs like Ajax, for example, PSV, Anderlecht, and they all pull the youth card. Yes, they do a couple of more expensive transfers now and then, but most of their guys are from their own youth, or they pick them up when they're young. And I think if we're going to classified like German-born Turks and European-born Turks or whatever as foreigners, I think then the quality of our league is seriously going to take a nosedive, because I don't think people realize how many of the good players currently and in the past in Turkey have been from Germany. I mean, just from the golden generation, Ümit Davala was from Germany. Ilhan Mansız was from Germany. Ümit Karan was from Germany. Ümit Özat was from Germany. I mean, so many guys. I mean, if you look at it, like, I don't think that'll be that will be a good thing for the league. Like, I think the foreign limits in general isn't a good thing. It's not going to improve the quality of our league, because the problem is that the clubs don't, not just the clubs, it's just the entire country doesn't invest enough in the youth development. But is that going to change if you're going to? I think our quality of the league is just going to go down, and maybe, yeah, they'll invest more in youth development. They'll have to, but
I feel like it's
at the cost of
yeah,
what?
I feel
I
like
mean.
you kind of have to force the clubs to do some certain things because I don't I, youth development in Turkey is in shambles. I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, it's been outsourced to like Germany, Holland, Belgium, France, England, or the UK in general for years. I mean, I'm waiting for the day where you have a Turkish kid born here in the US and then he has to choose between the US and Turkey and where the debate goes from there because the US at least has a lot of different ethnic groups, different nationalities playing for the United States national team. See, I mean, you got someone who's an Icelandic American, you have like the German Americans who had a serviceman father, you obviously, when it comes to Turkey, there's always like people who are half Turkish, like yourself, or who I can't remember, I can't think of any players off the top of my head who are half Turkish, but I mean, at this point,
Kerim
Kerem
Fray.
Fray, yeah, Kerem Fray, I can't really imagine, these days, those type of players in the diaspora wanting to play for Turkey because the country's still in shambles and. While the country's football structure, infrastructure is kind of in shambles and, but I mean, these are problems we've talked about
Well,
for a long time. It's just that nobody is really willing to do anything about it. And, as much as Fatih Terim is probably the best coach Turkey has ever had, I kind of still consider him to be overrated because, with Fiorentina, he obviously got into a Coppa Italia final. Back in, I think it was what, 2001-ish, 2001, something like that. But yeah, I mean, he had problems with the board, and he's kind of an egotistical guy. But Terim's basically the best coach that Turkey's ever had by default. But you know, if his attitude starts to go into other forms of the Turkish, you know, development system, well, then it might be a detriment to Turkey instead of a benefit.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Terim being overrated, that just depends who you ask, I guess. I mean, if you ask if you ask most Galatasaray fans and you ask their opinion on him, then yeah, they're going to overrate him. I think he's without a doubt, you know, the best Turkish coach in history. He's proven that with what he's achieved, but he is like tactically not the strongest coach. I think he's shown that against Holland, and he showed that again at Galatasaray this year, last year, and he showed that in the past as well. He's a motivator, and he gets players motivated, and he gets them to play on adrenaline, and sometimes that works, and it's worked a lot for him, but it's also blew up in his face a couple.
Yeah, but he has this really abrasive personality. That's my problem with him sometimes. And like you said, he's really more of a motivator. He's not really much of a tactician. But then again, I mean, is there really any coaches that are really good tacticians in Turkey?
Turkish
coaches?
Yeah,
Turkish coaches. Because I think if we're talking about Turkish coaches, it may be a coach of Turkish descent who's probably in Europe or even here in the U.S. maybe.
I think Fuat Chapa is decent, but he's from the Belgian school. I think from really, I mean, like if we look at the current crop of, you know, high profile Turkish coaches, I think there's Ersun Yanal. Is he tactically that great? I don't think so. He makes really weird decisions sometimes. Ertuğrul Salam has made many weird decisions at times. Aykut Kocaman made really weird decisions. I don't really think there's that many great Turkish coaches, all-rounders. But then again, I mean, I think most coaches in general, like how many really great coaches are there in the world?
Only a handful, like, really only a handful.
Yeah. I mean, Guardiola is an amazing coach. He's showing that at Bayern Munich now. But you also have to see what kind of tools he's working. But the thing is, he has great players at Bayern Munich, but what he's doing right now at Bayern is very impressive because he took the best team in the world and he's making them better. He's making them play like Barcelona right now. And that's amazing. That's commendable. And then we had Sir Alex Ferguson. I think he was without a doubt probably the best coach in the world. But then it's like Mourinho, is he really as great as people make him out to be? Did great stuff at Porto. Then he had a lot of money to spend at Chelsea. I had a lot of money to spend at Real Madrid. I mean, once a coach gets to a club where they get so much money thrown at them that they can buy like the best players in the world, and there's a point where, I mean, Mourinho, is he really that great of a coach? I mean, he lost control of his team at Real Madrid. If you lose control of your team as a coach, you're not that great of a coach. Let's be honest. That's the job of the coach, keep him in check. He couldn't do that.
Speaking of coaches, you know, I think Fatih Terim can keep a lot of these Turkish players in check, but he has really more of that abrasive, you know, bullying personality. And, you know, we'll have to go on to some other stuff. We'll have to wrap this discussion up, by the way.
Yeah, I could go on for hours, you know.
Yeah, I know. You are the long-winded one. But, yeah, I mean, we've got a couple other things to talk about real fast. But I guess, in conclusion, I think, you know, where does Turkey go from here? You know, I mean, we've talked about the problems, you know, in Turkish football in terms of, you know, the national team. But it's just basically beating a dead horse at this point, I think, if I want to keep it short.
I think the best hope we have right now, and I might be a little bit biased because of this, but, you know, if Beşiktaş sets the good example, because they're pulling the youth car right now, if they set the good example and in a couple of years they start winning some prizes, maybe the other teams start thinking to themselves, well, maybe we should do this as well, because we've talked about this off-air as well, that, you know, Galatasaray financial issues. At some point, you're going to have to change their ways and start pulling the youth car as well. And Fenerbahce, you know, I think they'll, with a new chairman, hopefully that's not so out on. I think Yildirim was an amazing chairman the first 10 years or so, but he kind of dropped the ball last.
Yeah. So, but I guess really, I mean, the whole point is, you know, we're talking about stuff that we haven't mentioned before. I mean, it's not like we haven't talked about this sort of thing before, but, you know, Turkey, I mean, you just got to get them motivated to really change things. And, you know, you need somebody, you know, who has that sort of abrasive personality. You know, maybe we might talk about an Ataturk-like personality in football, you know. And, you know, for Hamid Altıntop, who once said that, you know, Fatih Terim is the Ataturk of Turkish football, I'm like, no, he's not. But anyway, let's move on to some of the other things that are going on in Turkish football. I mean, you know, I'm sure you've heard, you know, Jeremy and I have been talking about the adventures of Konak Belediyesi, and, you know, congratulations to them, because Konak Belediyesi wins 2-1 on aggregate, the second leg of the UEFA Women's Champions League round of 32 against Unia Rasibors of Poland. Unia Rasibors and Konak Belediyesi drew 0-0, so Konak Belediyesi moves on, and they will face SV Neulingbach of Austria. They advanced over Apollon of Cyprus and in the round of 16, so Konak Belediyesi will face Neulingbach of Austria in the round of 16. So I know you pretty much have no clue about women's football, but maybe we could provide a little bit of a brief discussion about your thoughts about maybe women's football in Turkey. You know, I mean, I give Konak Belediyesi all the credit in the world. You know, they're really in uncharted territory for really any sort of, you know, women's football team in Turkey. I mean, I know that, you know, when it comes to women's sports, really women's basketball is pretty popular. Women's volleyball is probably much more popular than women's basketball. But, you know, with women's football, it's, well, not that great. And, you know, we've talked about that before, but I don't think you've spoken about, you know, women's football in Turkey. You know, I don't know how it is in Belgium, and I don't know if you follow that it much in Belgium. But for Konak Belediyesi, I say, you know, good for you, and, you know, good luck in the next round. And, you know, if they advance to the round of eight, I mean, hey, I mean, at this point for me, for Konak Belediyesi, I think, hey, I mean, you're in uncharted territory. I mean, they really have nothing to lose at this point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's always good to see, you know, Turkish teams do well in Europe. I'm not a fan of women's football at any point or anything, but and I haven't followed it. I've only read what you tweeted out, basically. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. But I have no clue about their team. I don't know. All I know about women's football is that Germany and the U.S. are pretty right. good.
Yeah, well, for you, you know, Konak Belediyesi is based in Izmir. So it's like one team from Izmir is actually doing good in football, even though it's the women's team. And obviously, you know, there isn't really much in terms of attendance. Jeremy and I talked about that last week. But, yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, Konak Belediyesi have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And, you know, other than, I mean, we always say, oh, we're disappointed in how Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, and Beşiktaş do in Europe, but at least we got one team. And, you know, nobody really expected it from them. And, you know, they're really in uncharted territory. So I really have to say, you know, good on them for advancing that far.
Yeah, definitely. Congratulations to them, you know. More power to them, yeah. You know.
You know, let me ask you one quick question. Please don't be long-winded about this. If Beşiktaş created a women's football team, how do you think the support would be? Because we've seen Trabzonspor, they did have a women's team. In fact, they were the Women's Super League champions a few years ago, but they shut them down because they didn't have the funding for it. But if Beşiktaş had the funding and decided to form a women's team, do you think that maybe they would have at least some decent support?
I'm sure of it, actually. I think any you know, Galatasaray, Fenerbahce, Beşiktaş, the fans in Istanbul, they're quite, you know, chauvinistic about their team. I think as long as you, like, don't let them play in a 10,000 capacity stadium, you know, 2,000 to 3,000, and I think probably get quite some fans to watch it. I mean, it's like basketball in Turkey. I mean, basketball is probably like the second sport in Turkey, and you know, if you look at the drop off compared to football, basketball matches like 3,000 to 4,000 fans, mm-hmm. maybe, or something like that. If you look, I think you'd definitely be interested in it, especially because we've seen it that in those matches, you know, with only women supporting, there's plenty of women following the club, so I'm sure they would have a interest, but not for me.
Right. I think maybe it might be a more of a novelty thing, what you're saying. Is it more of, would it be more of a novelty to you, or would it be continued support?
Let me put it this way. I've been a Bishtish fan for as long as I can remember. And when the Bishtish's basketball team comes to Belgium for EuroLeague or something, I'll go and watch to support them because they're Bishtish. But, I don't follow it as closely as I do football by any stretch. So I think a lot of fans would just go because it's Bishtish or because it's Fenerbahce or because it's Galatasaray.
Right.
You know? So if the I think that there will be plenty of interest. Well, that's relative, of course. A couple of, maybe 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, maybe a couple of hundred people. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably more than most women's football teams get in the stands. Well, I mean, yeah, women's football is. It's a pretty big in Belgium, so to speak. My girlfriend used to play football as well. She was pretty crap at it, she says. But and I knew quite a few girls that played football. But right. If you look the Belgian women's division, there's a lot of professional teams, but they don't have huge attendances or anything. But yeah, there's why not? Yeah. You know.
Okay, so let's end the podcast this week. The Super League gets back into action. It's week 8 of the Turkish Super League. There's matches on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. So Saturday, the 19th of October, Elazığspor faces Eskişehirspor, Galatasaray hosts Karabükspor, and Gençlerbirliği hosts Kasımpaşa. Sunday's matches will feature Gaziantepspor against Konyaspor, Trabzonspor against Sivasspor, Antalyaspor against Akhisar Belediyespor, and Kayseri Erciyesspor against Fenerbahçe. And Monday's schedule will have two matches, Bursaspor hosts Kayserispor and Beşiktaş hosting Rizespor. What kind of stands out to you? I know you're probably going to watch the Beşiktaş-Rizespor match, like I'm going to watch the Kayseri-Erciyesspor-Fenerbahçe match, but, looking at the schedule, I don't have the standings out in front of me, because obviously there was a...
I do.
Okay, so what stands out to you in terms of, the standings and what the general interest? Because, let's put it this way, Beşiktaş, they're starting their 4-match behind-closed-door suspension, and I think they'll probably have the women's and children-only thing. I mean...
Yeah, I'll have to mute my TV.
You'll have to mute your TV, right. So that the 4-match suspension will start there, but that'll be the end. It'll be the final game of Slaven Bilic's suspension from the touchline. So Rizespor isn't really much of a joke in my eyes. I mean, they've been doing...
No, they're in third right now. 13 points, 13 points. So they're in third position right now, shared with Akhisar Belediye and Trabzon. And that's it. And then Kasımpaşa and Sivas have 12 points. And then there's Eskişehir with 10, and then, drops down. I'm actually pretty interested in the Galatasaray Karabükspor match, mainly to see how how Burak Yılmaz, is he going to get back to his scoring ways? Because, he's been struggling the entire season so far, and I saw some positive stuff from Galatasaray fans on Twitter, maybe, this goal against Estonia will kick him off again, will get his motor running again, and then, he had that dreadful game against the Netherlands. So it's going to be interesting to see if he can get back to his scoring ways, because, I think we all know he's a little disappointed that he didn't get that transfer to Italy in the summer, but there's a chance that he gets... his transfer in the winter, but if he's going to have to, find his good form back if he wants that transfer, because I don't think anyone's going to pay 10, 15 million or, let alone the 20 plus million that Unal Aysel wants for him, for a striker that, misses chance after chance. So I'm going to be really interested to see how he's going to cope with his current form. Is he going to turn it around? And Wesley Sneijder now, scoring for Holland, he's scored one goal so far this season for Galatasaray and hasn't given a single assist yet. So maybe that will be a good incentive for him. Getting a goal for Holland, maybe he'll find his form for Galatasaray now. Also with a new coach that he actually gets along with. So it's going to be interesting to see. Yep. I think. And Karabük, not a team to underestimate.
No, you remember last year they won all the Istanbul road games. So that's always a huge factor coming in. You know, one other match I'm kind of interested in now I'm looking at the standings is Gaziantepspor versus Konyaspor, because we saw like their struggles at the beginning of the season, but you know, they found a little bit of form. So mm-hmm. you see that, you know, Gaziantepspor has won back-to-back games, so they're out of the cellar because they were just terrible the first 5 weeks.
They had it last season as well, remember? I mean, they had like the first half of the season, they were terrible, and then they had like a really good second half of the season, which I'm happy about, because I think Antep is a team that I wouldn't like to see disappear. Kind of like Ankara Gücü, who disappeared a couple of years ago. It's a shame to see teams like that go. So yeah, I hope they keep it up and they manage to stay in the league. About Konya, well, after their win, a surprise win against Fenerbahce in the first match, they had a little bit of a slump, and they're slowly but steadily crawling out of it. I think it's going to be an interesting game. You know, Konya's got some interesting players like Gekas, of course. So yeah.
Well, another interesting fact that, you know, I should mention is Akhisar Belediyespor. They win all their games at home, but when it comes to the road, they really don't do so well. You know, and they're on the road against Antalyaspor, and you know, That should be a pretty interesting matchup. I mean, here's another interesting matchup on Monday with Bursaspor against Kayserispor. I mean, Kayserispor, I've read, like, they're off to their worst start in 9 years ever since joining the Super League back in, what was it, 04, 05, something like that, or 03, 04. But, yeah, it's like the worst start they've had in the last 9 years of competing in top-flight football in Turkey. So, I mean, Kayserispor, I mean, I said that, you know, they've been a disappointment because, you know, they got all these diasporal Turks, and, you know, it doesn't seem like they don't know what to do with them. You know, Prashnieki, you know, the whole board resigning last week, we reported on that. Yeah. And I'm just waiting for them to make the breakthrough. I mean, finishing fifth last season, I'm just waiting for them to make that breakthrough, but it never just seems to come for Kayserispor.
Well, they had Poznanski, I think, who had his mindset on a Beşiktaş coaching job at the beginning of the season. Didn't get that. Then got a contract extension instead. They lost Bobo, who scored 18 goals for them last year. I mean, he got injured for a couple of months, and I think they're missing his scoring ability. They got Nobre from Mersin last year, but I don't think Nobre's really found his form, so I think they're kind of lacking those Bobo goals on the front. I don't think they'll be relegating, and if they do, they'll probably just change their names. Kayserispor.
Yeah, if anybody knows that story, you know, I think was it Erciyesspor went up in 03-04, and then they switched names, and then the form.
No, they were both in the Super League, and Kayserispor relegated, and Kayserispor didn't. Yeah. So they just changed around, basically. That's why when you were saying, well, they've been in the league since 2005, I was thinking,
Yeah, there's that. There was that exception.
There's a little bit of an asterisk there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of an exception. Yeah, like you said, it's like a asterisk or something like that. But yeah, I mean, other than the matches, I mean, anything else that stands out to you? I mean, other than like matches involving the big three, you know, maybe Trabzonspor, Sivasspor, to see if Trabzonspor can continue that, you know, shutout streak going, because they've actually had a really good defense. You know, keep your eyes on Onur Kıvrak. You know, that 360 plus minute shutout streak. I mean, doesn't continue against Sivasspor, because Sivasspor, you look at the goals scored in comparison. You know, Trabzonspor has scored six and allowed six, but Sivasspor, they've scored 14 but allowed 12, so that's gonna be. Mm. I mean, Sivasspor has a very good attack, but you know, Trabzonspor has a good defense, so that should be interesting.
What I'm mainly interested in right now, and of course I'm biased to this, but you know, Beşiktaş had a tough first five games. You know, they had Trabzonspor in week one, then they had Bursaspor in week three, and they had Galatasaray after that, and they also already had Eskişehir away, which are some of the toughest games in. You know, in the league, we're seven matches played now. They have a couple of, on paper, easy games coming up now. So I'm very curious to see if Beşiktaş will be able to win those games that they should be winning. Because Fenerbahçe, Galatasaray, you know, they have their derby coming up in, I think, 2 or 3 weeks.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting. Especially, I think the most, what I'm very curious to see is Galatasaray going to start picking up some points, because they really, you know, I mean, the first couple of weeks we were hearing, well, nobody's won the league in week one or week two or week three, and it's That's true. I mean, we see that with Fenerbahce right now. I mean, they lost in the first week, and everyone was like, oh, my God, what's going on? And, you know, a couple of weeks later, and they're top of the table. But Galatasaray, they've been in a slump, and it's going to be interesting to see how they do the coming weeks, because if they keep this up, if they screw up a couple of more games, like two, three more games like they have been, they're going to fall behind a lot. And, you know, Fenerbahce won't be in Champions League next year. They won't be in Europe next year. But still, there's other teams there. Trabzon's starting to pick up the pace a little bit. I don't think Beşiktaş will be out of the top three. I've got pretty much quite a bit of confidence in the team and Bilic. So unless, you know, injury curse strikes again like it has the last couple of years for us, I think we'll be okay. So Galatasaray is going to have to pick up their pace. I mean, they're the defending champions, and you know, with their spending spree, they're going to want to qualify for Europe, for Champions League preferably, because otherwise they're going to get a financial hangover, I think.
Well,
so
let's put it this way about Galatasaray. They pretty much have 10 points because, well,
Yeah, definitely. I don't get why there's not been a decision about that yet.
Yeah.
They won that game. There was still 2 minutes to be played. Beşiktaş had an interesting free kick there. But 92 minutes have been played. Just give him the 3 points and let's move on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care if it's 2-1 or the 3-0 forfeit win. Just give Galatasaray the three points and let's move on with this, so I don't have to look at, you know, Beşiktaş and Galatasaray playing only 6 games or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, indeed. Let's just get to. Plus, I mean, it doesn't look nice on the tables for Galatasaray either. Like, they're in 13th right now with their 7 points, and those 10 points would actually take them up to 9th. So it wouldn't be. They would at least be in the left column then. So yeah, but yeah, they should just. I don't understand why they haven't made a decision on that yet. I don't get what's so difficult about
it. Yeah, I think you can tell we're frustrated at this point. It's like just say something about it. But whatever, I guess that's just the TFF for you. But I think we've gone a good amount of time for this week. I actually thought this would be a lot shorter, but you know, you are the long-winded one out of the both of us.
You know, when I'm on, then you're always going to have a ridiculously long podcast. Yeah. So,
but that's all right. You know, I think coming in this week. Thanks for filling in, though.
Yeah, happy to do it. Happy to do it, as always.
Okay, so.
And let's hope Jeremy's back then next week, so you don't have a 2-hour podcast.
Yeah, don't worry about that. He'll be back next week. So, yeah, Jeremy will be back next week. And again, Khan, thank you very much. And we want to thank you for listening to this week's Turkish Football Weekly. And we will see you all next time.